you believe there's support in both houses of Congress to fully repeal the president's health care reform bill?
No. The House already voted. The House has voted several times to repeal the health care bill in pieces and in whole. The Senate takes 60 people to do something. But on the Senate side, even with 60 people, it's called America's most deliberative body. They're just very slow. And most of their votes this year have been on roll call votes, trying to find out who's there, maybe who's alive. A lot of ages over there on the Senate side. But I, when you take a look at the president's health care bill, this is coming unraveled itself. A big section of it, the president abandoned, that's extended health care, nursing home insurance. That was part of the bill. So-called the Class Act. And the president himself abandoned it. He said, you know, we just can't afford it. It was ironic because there was a member of the Senate who put a provision in the Obamacare bill or the president's health care bill that said if you can't cost out this Class Act, this extended health care, or I call it nursing home insurance, if you can't cost it out, then you have to drop it. And so the actuaries looked at it. It said there would have to be 230 million adults in the country to contribute to the plan in order to keep it, and there aren't 230 million adults in the United States. But it goes to show that what Speaker Pelosi said, that vote for this bill, but we won't find out what's in it until you actually enact.
What do you think is a more practical alternative?
Well, the problem is that politicians, and I'm there, certainly a politician, but a lot of politicians try to do things in one fell swoop. I'm not in that. It's taken this country a long time to get into the trouble that it is today. And there is no one bill, call it what you want, that'll get Americans back to work. And there's no one bill that will solve an issue that impacts one-sixth of the economy, which is health care. And instead of trying to go about it and work it incrementally and build up support across the aisle, he went with this very large bill. I mean, let me give you an example. It should be a no-brainer that you should be allowed to buy prescription drugs across state lines. I'm sorry. You should be able to buy health insurance across state lines. There's states such as, I believe, Georgia, that really only have one or two health care insurance companies that are operating there. And so...
So they're basically almost monopolies.
They are monopolies. And everybody agrees that the more competition you have, the better off you are. I mean, that's... You don't have to be a liberal conservative. That's not even a political philosophical issue. That's just common sense, which means that most political issues are not common sense. And so if Congress came up with that bill, then you take that and then you pass it. The bill that allows small businesses to join together to form large purchasing pools, that actually passed the House several years ago, and it failed in the Senate by one vote. So you take things like that, and you set them up in smaller bills, so that people know what's in the bill. You build momentum for the bill. You build bipartisanship for the bill, and then you move it through Congress on that basis. That's what I preferred all along. Instead, we ended up with this monster 2,000-page bill, and we find out each day new things in there that nobody even knew were in it.
Our guest is Don Manzullo, longtime representative from the 16th Congressional District. I invite your phone calls at 874-8255. And let's go to the phones. Ted, you're on WNTA with Congressman Don Manzullo. Hi, Ted.
Good morning, Kenny.
Good morning,
Congressman. Well, I haven't talked to you on this issue yet, Congressman, but I'd like to right now. You know, right now you got the president trying to put forward a jobs bill, which I believe is going to fail. And I believe any jobs bill is going to fail if it doesn't start talking about repealing NAFTA, CAFTA, and maybe even a little better control on our ports if you're going to sell here, build here. And my question to you is this. You know, I hear everybody talking about this, and the only thing I see about getting American people to work is this jobs bill. Why don't I hear the Republicans saying, hey, we got to get rid of NAFTA. Hey, we got to get rid of CAFTA. Because these are the two things that spiraled us down this path. You know, when these bills came forward and took place, it's when our jobs started getting outsourced around here. And no jobs, no money, bad economy. It's really simple math.
Thank you, Ted.
Well, Ted, the every congressional district is different. And we have a congressional district that has, just in Winnebago County, we think somewhere between 1,800 and 2,000 factories. We just don't know, because these factories start up all the time. They're very interesting enterprises. McHenry County, which most people think is a bedroom county, has 600 factories. It has a 17% manufacturing base, which is astounding. That means 17 out of 100 people work directly in manufacturing. Winnebago County, it's about 25%. And if you take the counties of Boone, Ogle, and Winnebago those are what is called the Metropolitan Statistical Area for Rockford. Our exports are about $3.2 billion a year. This is one of the most intensive exporting areas in the country, 22nd in the country, and it's the most export-intensive area in the state of Illinois, coming right out of northern Illinois. And so we benefit a lot in our area from our exports. And if you just go through, let me take, for example, the Chrysler plant in Belvedere. 42% of that product is exported. 42%. That means 42 out of every 100 cars manufactured in Belvedere is exported. That's astonishing, staggering. And even in a slow year, Chrysler sells $20 million worth of product each month to Mexico for Mexican consumers. So our area actually is a net gainer in terms of the free trade agreements, both with NAFTA and CAFTA. And what we have to understand also is the fact that it's not a matter of the free trade agreements, but also enforcing the laws on the books against people that don't play by the books, which is the Chinese, for example. There are experts that cook in the currency, that is manipulating our currency. They buy about $1 billion every day of U.S. dollars in order to keep their RMB artificially low. They're notorious intellectual pirates. They knocked out Fellows, which makes the shredders out of suburbs in Chicago. They knocked out their facility that employs 1,300 people in China. They actually stole their intellectual property. And then in terms of subsidizing their companies and being involved in unfair trade practices, China leads the pack on it. So you have to keep China's feet to the fire, and anybody else who gets involved in unfair trade practices. At the same time, you take a look at the free trade agreements. These really do, on a net basis, help out northern Illinois.
Can we keep the hold the Chinese feet to the fire when they hold so much of our debt?
Well, we're also their biggest customer. I mean, the Japanese cannot afford to put the United States in a position where we become even more economically weak. Otherwise, they have nobody out there that's going to buy their products. And the Senate passed a bill about 3 weeks ago by, I think, 75 to 25, a huge margin, whereby manipulating the currency is considered to be a violation of our unfair practices law, subject to retaliation by the United States.
All right, we've got a lot of people who want to talk to you, Congressman. Dave, thank you for holding. You're on WNTO with Congressman Don Manzullo. Hi, Dave.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Dave.
Last time I talked to you, I asked you if you knew of any government employees that lost their job due to them not knowing what they're doing. And since then, we've come up with that new solar panel place that's $500 million costing us taxpayers. And am I seeing anything? I mean, when you're not going to go to jail for breaking the law, then you have no fear of breaking the law. And the problem I don't understand is these people are breaking the law, and also you have government agencies that are supposed to oversee this, and not only and they know they're breaking the law, they're not even losing their jobs. So here's my next question. What do you think it would take for a government employee to actually lose their job? I mean, it's been 15 months since that guy with the big fat finger that caused our stocks to drop, 4,000 or 5,000 points in less than an hour? No one's lost their job, and
Dave,
no one's gone to jail.
Since you called last time, we did some research. The Office of Personnel and Management, OPM, put out a statement that 11,000 federal employees had lost their jobs last year. I didn't have that information when you called last time.
I apologize, but I mean, did they lose their job because, quote unquote, we don't have the money to pay them anymore?
No, these were.
Did they lose their job because they just are incompetent?
It's the latter. These people were not laid off because of economic issues. They were laid off because of incompetence.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Ray. You're on WNTA with Congressman Don Manzullo. Hello, Ray.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Ray.
Mr. Manzullo, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
I have a friend who works at the Chrysler plant. At the Chrysler plant, right here in our own backyard, they manufacture a four-cylinder diesel engine caliper car, whatever it's called. They manufacture them solely to import to Europe and other countries, because there's a federal law that does not allow the manufacturing of diesel-powered cars here in the United States. Can you explain this to me? I mean, what's the rationale behind
it? I don't know, Ray. Could it have something to do with emission standards? I'm not... So what you're saying is that Chrysler and Belvedere manufactures a caliber that has a four-cylinder diesel engine that's only allowed to be sold in Europe but not the United States.
That's correct.
I don't have I can find out the information on that, Ray, and if you could give your number off the air, then we can get back to you with a more exact answer on that.
Okay. Hey, Ray, I'm going to put you on hold. Would you leave your number with my producer, Howard, and then we'll pass it on to the congressman?
Sure, I will.
Thank you, Ray. Steve, you're on WNTA with Congressman Don Manzullo. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Mr. Manzullo.
How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Doing fine.
I have a question for you, and I guess it's more of just talk about jobs and jobs that are going to illegal aliens, and what can be done as far as taking care of that. There's a bill now in the House, I presume. It's being held up by the House Ways and Means Committee for E-Verify. And also the federal government are suing some states who are trying to do something about that, saying it's their job, but then they're not doing it. So could you talk about that?
Yes. First of all, the I find it interesting. The federal government doesn't do its job as to adequately secure the borders. Then a state tries to step into the breach. The state gets sued by the Department of Justice, saying even though we're not doing our job, you can't do the job that impacts all Americans. And that's why I have big problems with the court striking down some of those laws. The second thing is we voted in June of this year for, H.R. 2000, it's called the Secure America Through Verification and Enforcement, the SAVE Act. That's the one that would make mandatory worker verification through E-Verify system. And also that an employer would be able to use E-Verify before the employee is hired and not after the employee is hired, and then the employer does a second guess or second check on that. And so the that would go a long way, and we also got onto a bill to allow the Department of Homeland Security to indefinitely detain, subject to reason, of course, certain immigrants waiting deportation, including aggravated felons and violent criminals. And so these are you know, these are the things that should be done. They're not that hard to enact, and I agree with you 100%, but the last thing we need is illegal aliens taking jobs away from Americans who are looking for work.
All right, Steve. Ben, thank you for holding. You're on WNTA with Congressman Don Manzullo. Hello, Ben.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Ben.
Hey, how you doing, Don?
Gentle Ben, how are you today?
Oh, I'm gentle as ever, but I have a few questions. How are you?
Well, you're always gentle with your questions, and I appreciate that.
Really?
Okay. Go ahead. You see there, I disarmed you, Ben.
Uh-huh. Now,
go ahead.
You had mentioned about our exports and our Chrysler plant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, you were on record of wanting to let those companies not get bailouts, but loans. I fell to the tricky speech there. The loans, which they're paying back. Now, why would you be on record as not wanting to help these companies when they were creating so much for us and their exports as well?
Well, Ben, first of all, there is a difference between the loans and the bailout. I did vote for a bridge loan that was, I think, $7 or $8 billion out of a separate program that had been set up in Treasury, and I believe that's been paid to give the companies an organization an opportunity to reorganize. What I did oppose is the arbitrary manner in which the federal government disassembled both General Motors and Chrysler. Just take a look at what they did to the dealerships across the country. Going in there and arbitrarily saying, you're a winner, you're a loser, you're going to stay open, you're going to close. They would have been better off, in many cases, to have gone through bankruptcy, through Chapter 11 reorganization, which gives them an opportunity to work out a reasonable business plan, as opposed to the federal government coming in and the federal government setting up a plan so that people who were bondholders, people who've actually bought bonds on the open market, and nothing's more secure than a bond, they allowed those bondholders to be wiped out. That, you can't do that because it sets a precedent for the federal government determining which businesses are winners and losers. These car companies would have come back on their own, slimmer, more efficient, but certainly not in the position that they are now.
Well, you and I are going to disagree on this because, for one thing, I know that this is done all the time when businesses go out of business, either on state levels or whatever.
But not the federal government dictating the manner in which these businesses go out of business. That's the difference.
Okay. Now, I have a question about the last time I heard you on, I believe it might have been in July, August, a caller, Jake, had asked you when were you guys going to stop raiding the Social Security fund. Okay. And you said that when we pay off our debt. Now, mm-hmm. Okay. Now, who's in charge of allocating the money that we get to spend for this, that, or another?
Well, there's about of the $14 trillion in debt, Ben, about $4.5 trillion is internally, and I don't understand this either. I understand it, but it's wrong. It's internally held where the government borrows from the government.
And that's
the big problem because there's so much debt out there. It's the same problem as on Tuesday morning, the Federal Reserve going up and going out and buying our own notes, just creating money that doesn't exist just to put a liquidity back into the market. I mean, this
Congress has to approve any money allocated either by the president or whomever. Is that you guys' purpose?
Well, it is.
Congress allocates this
problem. Ben, the problem is that the debt. You can't come up with $4.3 trillion in one fell swoop. What we're trying to do is to restructure Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid to the point where you're going to get the same amount of services, only a lot more efficiently. That puts a lot less drain on the system and people paying into the trust fund. But I think it was just pure piracy when that trust fund was never legitimately set up. There are 147 trust funds, Ben. Unfortunately, they're all accounting funds.
Hey, Ben, I hate to do this, but I do have to break. We're up against the news. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll have more time for your phone calls for 16th District U.S. Representative Don Manzullo after these words.
Et cetera, on it. Perry's not doing that well. Obviously, Chris Christie is out of the issue, out of the question. And I think Republicans are sort of looking for another Ronald Reagan. And that's the problem. Nobody can measure up to that standard. I'm not a good prognosticator when it comes to presidential races. I was a Phil Gramm delegate, and I was a Fred Thompson delegate. They didn't go too well.
No.
I'm not doing that well in it. I think in the end, it may end up with something like a Romney-Cain ticket, which, if for anything else, people turn in the debates because they really like Herman Cain.
Fred, you're on NTA with Congressman Don Manzullo. Hi, Fred.
Hi, afternoon.
Hi, Fred.
Congressman.
Yes, sir.
Health care should not be a political issue, and certainly not a partisan political issue, but the reality is it's both. President Nixon, do you basically support, have been supportive of his policies?
Of who?
President Nixon.
No, he really expanded. He started the food stamp program. He started a lot of programs. I have problems with presidents who turn to government to be the solution to problems, whether they're Republicans or Democrats.
Well, the fact is that President Nixon tried to get a universal health care program. But Obama, I suppose, was very liberal. The sad reality, the irony is that Ted Kennedy blocked it because he wasn't going to allow Nixon care to get through. The fact of the matter is we need to get off history and bygones and partisanship. There is a book which should be read by every congressman and by Senator Obama called The Healing of America, The Search for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Health Care. And it was written by a T.R. Reid, no known relationship to the senator, who was an international correspondent for either the New York Times or the Washington Post. He has lived on 3 different continents in over 100 different countries, has had personal experience, and he has written this book, gives all the various pros and cons of different ones, and instead of getting partisan about it, trying to knock Obamacare, which also has its shortcomings, instead of looking for the worst case, we should combine the best. And I urge you to read this book and have your colleagues read it also. It's The Healing of America by T.R. Reid.
Thank you, Fred. Appreciate it.
I appreciate what you say. What you bring out is what I believed all along, is that there are a lot of good ideas, standalone ideas, that should be represented in standalone bills so that the health care crisis in this country is not reflected in a giant 2,200-page bill, which the Speaker of the House says you have to pass it before you know what's inside of it. And we had talked earlier in the program about the ability to sell health insurance across state lines. I mean, that's a no-brainer. And I think if that were a standalone bill, that would pass. So, I'm always open to see what's going on with regard to health care. And Americans spend a lot more money per capita on health care than any other nation in the world because Americans want that type of quality health care.
Joe, you're on NTA with Congressman Don Manzullo. Hi, Joe.
Hey, that's really fantastic that Congressman Manzullo could show up. Thank you so much for showing up, Congressman Manzullo.
Thank you, Joe.
And thanks for hosting him. Listen, I've been trying to get a hold of your office and other congressmen, and I sent letters out this about. If you give me about 30 seconds, I'll give you the sales pitch. And what it is this. I think that what we have to do is have a redesign of the healthcare system. The AMA is ultimately responsible for the healthcare system. And they've designed a system that just needs to be overhauled. We need, for example, the nurse practitioner gets a good first step, but we need sort of miniature doctor. We need like a cold doctor. You can train the guy in a year, and he treats every kind of cold you could possibly ever have or flu. And if he gets a red flag, he can send you on to the next level of tiered, and that's what we really need, is a tiered medical care system. And I just wanted to get that through to you because I don't think the letters ever made it.
Well, there are a lot of physician's assistants, PAs, that you'll see that are in the drive-in healthcare clinics, and also in some cities in the larger drugstores. They actually have a health clinic. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just kind of feel like that the measures we have taken are not, they don't even amount to a drop in the bucket, and here's why, because If we really take a look at the system, it may be that the first place in a modern system that I would go if I had a medical problem would be the internet. Then the second place would I get a referral to either a walk-in clinic or to go immediately to the emergency room or whatever. and a tiered system that's tiered throughout. I think the doctors, at some point, if you think about this one, you go through 8 years of college and 4 years of medical school, 4 years of residency, or whatever it is, it's 16 years of education, and 2 or 3 years into your practice, you're saying, okay, you've got a cold, and you're writing prescriptions, and that's one-third of your day. And that's something you could trade somebody, you know, like I said, probably a year of training or 2 years of training, and you're right, they do have these things, but I just think that we can do way better, you know. And ask the AMA, redesign this.
Thank you, Joe.
Because that's
Joe.
The right thing, and thank you for letting me, you know, explain that, because, if, you know, if it was an oil change, I wouldn't want a GM engineer coming in to change my oil.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Valerie, you're on WNTA with Congressman Don Manzullo. Hello, Valerie.
Hi. Good
Hi, Valerie.
Gentlemen, I hope you can hear me at lunch here.
We can. Go ahead. No problem.
Hey, congratulations to Frieda on her award. That was nice, by the way.
She,
on her volunteer work with...
In cancer, and now also in heart. She's quite a lady and come through a whole lot, and I love her dearly.
I know you just, do. I know you
I'm
do.
I'm so thankful she's here.
I won't keep you, and I can't hear you very well, so I'll
here.
Be quick.
Is this better, Valerie?
I'm sorry?
Is this better? I'm closer to the mic.
Oh, it's on my end.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Just the luck of the draw when the phone answered. Anyway, I am with the Greater Rockford Italian American Association. You know, one of our biggest events is Festa Italiana.
Is this Valerie DeCastries?
Yes, it is DeCastries.
Hi, go ahead, Valerie.
Yes, and we would like you to consider sponsoring legislation to make October Italian American Month, Heritage Month. It's a national effort that's going on throughout the country, and I know you signed on last year, but the bill didn't go anywhere, and we were wondering if you could help revitalize or revitalize.
Well, let me, Congress stopped doing these so-called memorial bills of doing such and such a month and everything, but Congressman Lipinski and I got creative. The two of us signed on to a bill to make, I think, June National Engineering Month. And the two of us declared June as National Engineering Month pursuant to legislation. The legislation had two members of Congress on it and never got to the floor because it wouldn't be considered. But we would do something similar. You introduce a resolution, and it just calls people's attention to the fact that even though the resolution is not passed, at least it's considered by Congress, and we just proclaim it to be a Heritage Month. We could do that.
Oh, we'd be very interested in that, and I'll be in touch with your office.
Yeah.
All right, then.
That'd be fine. Thanks,
Valerie.
Thank
you, Valerie. EJ, you're on WNTA with Congressman Manzullo. Hi, EJ.
Good day, Ken.
Hi, EJ.
Since we first learned of Herman Cain's candidacy, we've been very willing to support him because he's a non-politician running for the office of president. Very refreshing. However, isn't it interesting and maybe not so amazing that this entire time we've been unable to learn over the air or in print what is his position on illegal aliens? And that's trespassing, not immigration.
Well, I don't know. Does he have anything on his website on that?
We haven't heard a thing. Nobody seems to know.
I don't know.
It's time we learned.
Thank you, EJ.
Thanks, EJ.
How can we better utilize our airport to stimulate economic growth in this area?
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on, especially in terms of cargo. I was very fortunate, actually blessed several years ago, to be able to get the international terminal. There are only three airports that have the international terminals, O'Hare, Midway, and Rockford. And that obviously is used for pilots that are flying internationally. I mean, they have the place to go to. The airport board is going through a transition, and they are really concentrating on trying to get more cargo planes to come in. I was with the Washington UPS staff this past week, and UPS is very much interested in getting more international carriers to come to Rockford so then they could take and sort, use the Rockford UPS sorting system. So I know that there's a lot of activity going on there. But, you know, we have the facility. We have the international terminal, and we have the proximity to Washington, or to Chicago. It was about several months ago when the Japanese airline cargo plane came in, and they did a test run to see if they could come in, unload in Rockford, get the goods to the Chicago suburbs in the same or small less amount of time than O'Hare, and obviously at a cheaper price. So those are going on all the time. In fact, when John Michael, who's the chairman of the House Transportation Committee, came out and visited, he's very much interested in seeing more international charters leave Rockford.
Any plans to retire?
No. Every 2 years, you take a journey to the bottom of your heart and say, you know, what should I do in life? And did I think about it this year? Yeah, especially in light of Frida's illness. But Ken, she's perfect. She suffered no heart damage when her heart stopped, believe it or not. But I mean, she's perfect. And her health is excellent. She's on heart medication, mm-hmm. as any heart patient should be. So, you know, Frida's in great shape, and that would have determined what I wanted to do. But I thought about it, said, what do I do best? Because I spent three-fourths of my time doing manufacturing issues. And there's nobody else carrying the flag in Congress as I do on manufacturing. I'm not saying that others aren't interested. But we've been working, for example, months with the styrene issue. The HHS says styrene is a carcinogen. The EU and Canada said it's not. We're trying to get the National Academy of Sciences to reverse that study. If it's not reversed, we could lose the entire plastics industry in this country. And I've been working with the chemical people, the plastics people, the composite people, the engineers. It's a huge consortium on a nonpartisan basis with Democrats and Republicans, and I carry the flag for that. And I that's what I do best.
What would you say to a critic who says we need new blood, fresh blood?
Well, then you have to show that there's something wrong with the old blood. And this blood's strong.
Look at
I had an EKG.
With all due respect, look at the unemployment rate in this region.
Well, if somebody replaces me, that would help up with the unemployment.
Not necessarily, but maybe.
Well, I don't know about that. I think anybody who wants to replace me is already working.
Joe, you're on NTA with the Congressman, Don Manzullo. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
How's it going?
Going fine. How are you today?
How's Senator Lipinski going?
Dan Lipinski?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing fine. He's a very good friend of mine, very active in the manufacturing caucus.
Yeah, I worked with his dad, Bill Lipinski.
Did you really?
Third Ward.
Really, really great people. Very dedicated public servants.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would like to retire, but I can't because I won't have insurance coverage. Now, if you could lower the Medicare down to 62 or 63, you'd get a lot of people to retire. And if you get a lot of these, the baby boomers like me to retire, you'll open up a lot of jobs.
Joe, you're not the first one that came up with that thought. There was actually a plan out there, and I don't want to say it was part of Hillary Care, where if you could come up with the premium to buy into Medicare, that would allow people over 60 to buy into it. And
as long as it's not $1,000 a month.
Well, that's the problem because Medicare is not actuarially sound, and it could be very expensive, to afford. But that's one of the reasons why what we've been trying to do for years, and what Congress almost did, was to have these association health plans, so that if a person is self-employed or works for a small company, all these people could join together into large purchasing pools to bring down dramatically the cost of health insurance. That would help you out, Joe.
Yeah, well, you're talking about Medicare. Didn't Obama take like $500 billion out of there?
He took $550 billion out of Medicare.
Yeah, then he's taking some more money out of Medicare?
That's correct. He wants to take, I think, an additional $400 billion out. Nobody knows where that's going to come from. And you have go ahead.
That's why Medicare is insolvent.
That's correct.
Everybody's taking money out of it.
That's correct.
Hey, it's like they're putting your hand in my pocket.
It is.
Money.
Joe, thank you for
thank
your
you,
call. Albert and Joe, I apologize. We're not going to have time. Congressman, as always, thank you for your time. Rich, thank you for arranging this,
could
as always.
Could you get Albert and Joe to give her the number to your director, and I'll call them personally if possible?
Joe and Albert, if you're still listening, if you can call 874-8255. They did hang up, and perhaps we can, or just call the congressman's office.
You can do that.
Yeah. What's the number?
It's 815-394-1231.
Okay. Thank you so much. Good to
you
see
bet.
You.
Thank you.
1254. We'll